Blog Talk Radio.
One, two, three, four. Can I have just a little more? Five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. I love you. A, B, C, D. Can I bring my friends to D? E, L, G, H, I, J. I love you.
Saturday morning wake up call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you for the next 90 minutes as we discuss the world of sports on this 12th of May 2012, Mother's Day weekend. Happy early Mother's Day to all the mothers out there all over the country, all over the world for that matter. And of course, I'll be celebrating it with my mother tomorrow. So I hope everybody enjoys their weekend. Take your mom somewhere. Just be a fancy restaurant. Just take her somewhere. As always, you can follow me at twitter.com/WilliamGerald or hit me up at facebook.com/CyrilQuinn. The call number is 347-215-6180. And you can always find my blogs or as well as audio from this show on at CyrilGeraldQuinn.com. Certainly, the top of this show or a couple of my favorite segments will be on that on CyrilGeraldQuinn.com before the weekend's out. We begin with the NBA, and there will be a couple of Game 7s. We'll have two Game 7s this weekend. Tonight, Lakers at Denver. Lakers hosting Denver, and then tomorrow, Memphis hosting the Clippers. Last night, the Clippers, I'm not going to say blew opportunity, because even though Memphis, that game was close, it just felt like you got to say, I know the Clippers were up by 8 points in the fourth quarter with 8 minutes left, but it felt like Memphis was, that was Memphis' game. You know, when they can get Gasol and Randolph going, they can beat anybody, not just the Clippers, they can beat anybody in the league. When you have those two guys playing well, because they control the paint, the physical. You see Gasol go out there. Gasol was the best player on the court. And as a Laker fan, I wish I could trade Gasol's now. I wish I could have that trade back right now and have Mark Gasol. But I'll get to that later. They absolutely controlled the paint. You could tell Paul and Griffin were not themselves. And I really feel bad for the Clippers. I do, because they're probably going to lose this series. Memphis at home. You know the percentage is 85%. And the teams win, the home teams win game seven over the course of playoff history. Memphis probably going to win that series on Sunday, unless, again, Chris Paul and Blake Griffin can miraculously heal up, because last night both of them just looked bad, and there's no way they can beat Memphis with those two guys not playing their A games. At least I would say Chris Paul. I mean, Blake Griffin, they won game one without Blake Griffin being Blake Griffin, because Chris Paul was that good. They absolutely need Chris Paul to be on top of his game. And last night he looked like a shell of what he's looked of himself, basically almost getting outplayed by Mike Conley Jr., which should never happen and wouldn't happen if Chris Paul were 100% healthy. This has been a great series. You know, from the 27-point comeback in game one, and, you know, I thought it would end up in seven games. I really did. Even when Memphis was down 3-1, the series was so close. It didn't get the feel of a series that's normally 3-1. So I thought that this would end up in a game seven. And again, who knows what can happen? I mean, you know, it's not like Memphis has this great history of winning game sevens. Okay, this is kind of newfound. This will be the second straight year that they're in a game seven. They lost Oklahoma City last year at Oklahoma City. So, you know, maybe that experience, that certainly experience won't hurt them. But this Clipper team is a relatively young team. A lot of these guys haven't even been in game sevens. Chris Paul certainly has been lost to, as he lost his New Orleans Hornets back in 2008, lost at home to San Antonio. But for the most part, you know, with guys like DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin, those guys, you know, Eric Bledsoe, Randy Foy, those guys don't know what it, you know, don't have get that game seven experience, especially on the road. You know, game seven on the road is a whole nother animal when you're talking in basketball. It really is. So I expect that, again, expect a very competitive game. I think I think Memphis will win the game, but again, it's unfortunate because I really believe that the Clippers have outplayed Memphis during the course of this series. Game five, you know, they were about 24 points. You blink your eyes, and Memphis and the Clippers have cut the lead to five. And like I felt at that point, like, you know, and this was before the injuries to Paul and Griffin. Like, they're gonna win game six. So you will get a game seven, between Clippers and Memphis on Sunday. Again, later on the program, we will talk more in depth about game seven tonight between the Lakers and Denver, when we do a little bit more NBA. Also talk about LeBron's third MVP and what does it mean. What does it mean to mean for him moving forward? 347-215-6180 is your call number. Just getting started here on this beautiful May morning. This is the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. This morning. Saturday morning headlines. Game seven of the Eastern Conference semifinals will take place tonight between the Caps and the Rangers. Capitals trying to stun yet another powerhouse on their home ice. They did it to Boston in the round before. Now they try to take out the number one seed Rangers. I like this Capitals team. It's just something about how gritty they've been, how tough they've been. I give them credit for it. And you asked me about this move a year ago, 2 years ago. I look at you like you're crazy. Less ice time for Ovechkin has meant the Capitals have been more productive. I know he had a goal last game, but I give Dale Hunter credit. he's going with the guys who defensive guys. Goaltender has been great for the most part. This, you know, regardless of what happens in this game, I would consider this a successful postseason run for the Capitals. You know, you come in as an eighth seed, as a seventh seed, and you know they played well. They played well. You can go to a playoffs. You can get to back-to-back game sevens. You can get to back-to-back game sevens when you're not a favorite. That's pretty good. So I think the Capitals are going to win. I really do. I don't, you know, game sevens, hockey game sevens on the road are not like baseball or basketball game sevens at home on the road. They're a little different feel. I mean, we saw three years ago, Pittsburgh beat Detroit in Detroit, game seven of the Stanley Cup Finals. Okay, and this is the Detroit Red Wings. So, I mean, you can win game sevens on the road in hockey and not be shocking. Again, I like Washington in this one. I think they have a better all-around team than the Rangers. I think they have more weapons. You know, Backstrom. Simon, and Holby will not take a backseat to Lundqvist by any stretch of imagination. So you have a goal. Washington has a lockdown goaltender right now who is capable of going toe to toe with a guy who many people think is going to be the MVP of the league, and definitely the Vezina Award winner for that top goaltender. So it should be a great game. Listen, if you've gotten just overwhelmed by the NFL draft or by what's going on with these concussion situations or the NBA playoffs, you're missing a treat with these NHL playoffs, especially in the Eastern Conference. NHL playoffs have been great in the Eastern Conference. And as we head towards the conference finals, the winner of this game will face the New Jersey Devils, who have took out the Flyers in five games earlier this week and are rolling right now. First time the Devils have been in the Stanley Cup, in the Eastern Conference Finals in 9 years, since 2003. So should be a great game, and definitely looking forward to it. Chris Anderson probe continues. Now there's a little twist to this investigation. If you remember, Chris Anderson's home was investigated by the police. They seized his computers, allegedly, looking for possibly child pornography, things of that nature. Now Chris Anderson's attorney comes out and says that Chris Anderson, of course, who plays for the Denver Nuggets, that Chris Anderson, Bird the Bird Man, who has about 10 million tattoos, says that he's being extorted by a woman that he connected with in Denver not too long ago. Basically, not blew her off, but she basically didn't think that he was giving her a proper amount of attention. And now he claims that she wants revenge and she could be, she could have something to do with this. These guys, these athletes, sometimes use your noodle. Use your noodle with these girls. They met over the internet or something, or they met through it, and then she flew out there. Like, come on, you gotta understand what the position you're in. You have to understand who you are and the position that you're in. He has not played this entire series, and really hasn't played this entire series. They really haven't needed him, to be honest with you. I mean, they have Kenneth Faried, JaVale McGee have emerged. They have a pretty decent front line. And, it's a tough situation for a guy who's been through a lot over the course of his career. Tiger Woods makes the cut at the TBC Tour Players Championship after shooting a 68. He is 200 following second-round action. He is six shots behind the leaders, Zach Johnson, Kevin Na, and Matt Kuchar. Now you know how far he's fallen, because it's a big deal that he makes the cut. The story was, coming into this, was he had never missed two cuts in a row in his career, back-to-back cuts, ever. So, he's not going to win this tournament. I mean, he's been inconsistent throughout. He's had great rounds. He's had bad. He's had good rounds. He's had great rounds. He's had terrible rounds. So forget about him winning this tournament because it's not going to happen. The fact that we're making a big deal out of him not missing a cut for the second straight tournament lets you know how far he's fallen. It absolutely lets you know. And Mickelson, by the way, is also 2 under. Both of them are tied for 30th place for the TPC. But it just lets you know where Tiger Woods is at in his career. This is the story. The fact that he's not on the leaderboard in terms of being one of the top contenders, that he's struggling to make. He's having the birdie 4 straight holes and struggling to make a cut. Also, in some NFL news, Vince Young signs a 1-year deal with the Buffalo Bills. I think it's a good move for the Bills. Vince Young has been a capable starter in this league. He's won some. Has a good win-loss record, despite what you may think of him. We know he has some issues. That goes without saying. But I feel like a 1-year deal. Everything to prove, everything to lose could, maybe you strike gold here. I mean, maybe you find something. Maybe he'll mature and become a very good quarterback. I don't think he's never going to be great. But I think talent for talent, he has more talent than Ryan Fitzpatrick, I'll tell you that. And I would not be surprised if by October, early to mid-October, Vince Young is not the starting quarterback of the Buffalo Bills. Wouldn't be shocked in the least bit. 347-215-6180 is your call number. This is the Saturday morning wake-up call. When we return, we'll talk some baseball, some Friday night action, and we will talk about my favorite division. That and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday morning wake-up call. After the 9 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday morning wake up call, of course, some Friday night baseball action. Miami gets by the Mets 6-5, Washington over Cincinnati 7-3, Atlanta in a wild game takes out St. Louis 9-7, Texas pounds the Angels 10-3. This division, the NL East, is my favorite division. Well, obviously my favorite too. My team is in it in terms of the Mets. And Mets, lost last night, but are playing well for the most part. And certainly have exceeded any expectation that I had of them. I thought the Mets were going to be terrible. But playing well. And you look at this entire division. There's not a weak link in this division. I mean, you think about it. Phillies are in last place, but I don't expect that to last for long. All right, and once they start getting some people healthy, they'll play better. Now, I don't think they're going to win this division. I really don't. coming out to me, you know, Nationals, Braves, Marlins, Mets. I think, you know, I'm looking at this division. I almost think it's the Nationals division to lose. I mean, what from top to bottom, is there a team in this division that's better than the Nationals? With that starting pitching, with that pitching staff, with when they start getting healthy with some of their position players, once they get Worth back, when Zimmerman, you know, when Zimmerman and Morse and those guys come around, I don't think there's a better team in that division than the Nationals, to be honest with you. Miami, after a slow start, has started to play well. Zimbrano, Zeronoff had a good start this week, starting to swing the bats well. So looks like they're going to be around. Atlanta, again, you know, every time we want to count Atlanta out, they, you know, get some good pitching, they get enough hitting, and then they find themselves right there in the mix. So this division is going to be great throughout the course of the summer. And now you got a little nastiness in this division because, you know, situation with the Phillies and Nationals last week, Nationals took 2 out of 3. Cole Hamels hits Bryce Harper and then proceeds to admit that he purposely hit Bryce Harper. You have Mike Rizzo ripping Hamels. Oh, I love it. I love it. Yeah, you got to love it. Philly, the cities don't like each other anyway. Philly and D.C., even though they're basically, you know, D.C. people, Philly people come to D.C. all the time, okay? So I can tell you that now, living in D.C., I can tell you that happens all the time. Philly loves D.C., so, you know, whatever. It is a rivalry. And, you know, the thing you love about this is, and what makes this rivalry so great, is the fact that, or potentially has the potential of being great, is the fact that the Phillies they've been the incumbents. They're the team that's owned this division. They've been one of the best teams in baseball over the course of the past 5 to 6 years. And now they're getting a little older. Team's not as good as it's been this year. They have a bad contract with Ryan Howard, which is an awful contract, and they're going to lament that contract for years to come. They have an aging lineup, and now you have this Nationals team, which has been in obscurity for the better part since 2005. It's been awful. Took the time to rebuild themselves from the ground up, all the way down to the farm system, and now they are reaping the fruits of that with all this young talent. And with some, and let's be honest, let's give Rizzo some credit with these moves. Gio Gonzalez, Edwin Jackson, they paid off. I mean, those moves have absolutely paid off. Signing Bryce Harper, signing Strasburg. So now you have this up-and-coming team who says, you know what, it's our time now. Move out the way, old man. You've had your time. You've ate our time. It was our time to eat. So step aside. And you gotta love it. I mean, Nationals. You know, last week you said I was riding the metro over the course of the weekend. Still saw a bunch of Philly fans, and they travel. And I give them credit; they travel. Mets fans travel as well. But the Nationals fans starting to come out a little bit, starting to show their faces. So, looking forward. You know, those Nationals Philly series are going to be must see series throughout the course of the season. And listen, Phillies are in last place right now, but don't discount the Phillies. They're going to be right there in the mix. I don't think they're going to win this division. I don't. But they will be there. They'll be right there in the mix. Bryce Harper last night hits himself with a bat, not literally, but cracks his bat. I guess the pieces of bat, you know, came back and him cut his under his eye, whatever. You love the emotion if you're a Nats fan. You love the passion, but you got to be a little smarter. I mean, come on, Bryce. I mean, be a little bit smarter. A little bit smarter than that. But it's going to be a great race with that National League East because there's no bad team in that division. I mean, the Mets have played extremely well. There's no bad team in that division. Josh Hamilton, been the hottest player in baseball right now. Right now, he will be the MVP of baseball, not just the American League, but the MVP of baseball. He leads all Triple Crown categories in batting average. He's hitting .407, 17 home runs, 40 RBIs. He has 8 home runs in his last 5 games. No player. He's tied with Frank Howard for having 17 home runs through 33 games, so having the most home runs through 33 games, through 33 team games, and right now he's rolling. And the guy, you know, I saw the four home run game he had in Baltimore. He just made it look easy. And those, again, Baltimore, I understand Baltimore, the Orioles Park is a bandbox, but none of those home runs were, he didn't, you know, he got his money's worth on all those home runs. I mean, he didn't, like, those were legit. They would have been out in any ballpark. I mean, those two of those were dead center field. So, if he can stay healthy, he has a legit chance at chasing the Triple Crown. Not only American League, but the Major League Triple Crown, to be honest with you. But Texas right now is in a very interesting spot with Hamilton. His contract will be up after this year. And I think Texas is in the catbird seats with him. A lot of people think that he is generating more leverage for himself because of the numbers he's going to put up. I disagree with that based on the fact that if you're Texas, and Texas understands this better than anybody, I don't care how great of a hitter he is, it still always comes down to the pitching. And Texas has great young pitching from top to bottom, especially with that bullpen. They have enough offense to where if they lose him, you know, they don't replace him. You know, collectively they can replace him. So it's not like their offense is not dependent on Josh Hamilton. So I don't think he is in the greatest position as you may think he is, or he may think he is. And also, again, he's been injury prone. He's 30 years old. He's had some off the field issue with alcohol and drugs. So he's going to get a nice contract, but I'm not sure that he's getting, you know, the Prince Fielder. Forget about Albert Pujols. The Prince Fielder. Teixeira, I'm not sure he's getting that, Joey Votto contract. I'm not sure he's getting that. Now, talent-wise, I think Josh Hamilton is the best player in baseball from pure talent. I don't think there's a more talented player in baseball than Josh Hamilton. Not Pujols, not Matt Kemp. Strictly physical and pure talent, he is the best player in baseball from that standpoint. Problem is, he has not, again, durability. His durability has been an issue. And, again, he can always – there's no telling when he can always, you know, go back into the – have a relapse and start drinking. I mean, that's just the truth of the matter. But, again, Texas is a good problem to have if you're Texas. You have this guy for the rest of the season and then possibly see what you're going to see, you know, possibly not have to pay him the kind of money that guys of his talent normally would be paid. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we will talk some NFL football, concussions running rampant, and we will try to answer the poll question of the morning. Would you allow your child to play tackle football? We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. Minutes after the 9 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Of course, you had last night yesterday you had a tribute or a celebration of life, as they called it, for one, the late Junior Seau, who, of course, took his life at the age of 43 with a gunshot to the chest. You saw Peyton Manning, John Elway, a host of other NFL legends, current and former. Dan Thompson was there. Dan Fouts was there. Takeo Spice. There's a who's who of NFL players, you know, honored the life of one Junior Seau. And there's been, again, a lot to be said. It's all intertwined to me with the concussions, you know, with this lawsuit on NFL former player, with 1,500 NFL former players, you have the safety of the league, of this new, with the bounties. Everything seems to be centered around concussions. And, you know, it just gives, I mean, you wonder, you know, if you're a parent, you have a six, seven, eight-year-old kid, and he comes up to you and says, "Hey, Mom, Dad, you know, I want to play football." What goes through your mind? What goes through your mind? Do you let them play? Because, you know, obviously it's not just, you know, concussions are not, you know, not just for, you know, the pros. I mean, you've seen these, I mean, girls, for some reason, concussions are running rampant in girls' soccer. That's just amazing to me. And I know soccer can be a physical sport now. I understand that. But it's, I mean, there have been an enormous amount of concussions in girls playing soccer. I mean, do you let your child play football? Used to be a question. Used to be, you know, you didn't even ask that question. Like, yeah, of course. You know, play sports. You know, build relationships, character, and, you know, things, and all that good stuff. Camaraderie. And now it's like, you know, I would let my child play. I don't have kids, but if I did, I would let them play. But I want to do the research on, I want to know what kind of equipment they have. I want to know what the helmets. I want to know, you know, are they being treated? What about the coaching? Are they being properly, you know, a lot of these injuries come from just improper techniques in terms of tackling. So I would be more apt to do my research on what kind of coaches, what kind of league this is, what kind of, like, techniques, things of that nature, with stuff that I probably wouldn't have thought about, or nobody would have thought about, you know, 2, 5, 10 years ago, without question. It's like, go out, you know, how much money the equipment costs, get your cleats and go out and, you know, go ahead and move on and go play. But now I think that, you know, you have to do all that research if you're a parent. And again, we've discussed this before, the NFL is in a tricky spot. I mean, the NFL has built this reputation, has made billions and billions of dollars on being the gladiator, violent sport, and just ferocious sport that it is. Now, the entertainment value, to me, will not suffer to that much because, you know, even if the defense, again, and I said this last week, even if the defense suffers, there are going to be so many points being scored. There's going to be so much offense that people are going to be glued to the television. And you're going to be getting games, you know, 51-43. I'll make this prediction on May 12, 2012. This will be the highest scoring NFL season, upcoming season of all time, ever. Cumulatively, you will see more scoring this NFL season than you've ever seen before. And, you know, if you're a fantasy lover like I am of the NFL, this is your season to join, to really go crazy from an offensive standpoint. There are going to be a ton of points on the board this upcoming season. Does that make for a better game? Not necessarily. That's the San Francisco Giant NFC Championship game was beautiful to me. I love great defense. I love that, you know, great defense is great defense. I love the fact that when the offense gets taken apart by defenses by a great defense. I love it. I love great defense, hate sloppy offense. So, you know, again, you know, and the thing that jumped out to me this week, you know, amongst all this concussion talking, you know, you heard Junior Friend's friend, you had a friend of Junior Friend come out, a friend of Junior Seau come out and say that he thinks Seau might have had 1,500 concussions. There was a piece outside the lines that was very sad with Duerson and Jim McMahon. Jim McMahon, Jim McMahon's girlfriend GPS's his directions just to make sure that he can get home, because his short term memory is shot. You know, you had, you know, Duerson's story, sad story, but the thing that jumped out to me, which tells me how real this thing is, even amongst the players, was Jacob Bell of the Tennessee Titans retiring at the age of 31. He signed a 1-year contract worth $800. He had signed a 1-year deal contract worth $890,000, which, you know, NFL standard, NFL, even in NFL, it's not a lot of money. But listen, I mean, $890,000 is $890,000. He's a marginal player. He's not a big, you know, not a great player or a bad player. You know, he's right in between. Retiring at 31 years old. Now, put this in perspective. Let me put this in perspective for a second. It is almost impossible. It's almost impossible to become a professional athlete in any sport. It really is. I mean, for the hundreds that make it, there are millions that don't. I mean, that's just all it is. Or hundreds of thousands that don't. This is all there is to it. Think about this. You've worked your entire life. You know, your family's made sacrifices. You've made personal sacrifices as far as time, especially if you play football, sacrifices on your body, maybe with your social life. You've done all this over the course of your life. Well, how many years you've been on this earth? 20, you know, he's 31. So I'm assuming he's already probably playing when he was like 8, 9, 10. So relatively 20 years. And you made it. You made it to the NFL. You reached the highest level of football in the world. Okay? And you walk away. Now, this is a guy, again, I don't know his financial situation. Okay? I just gave you what his salary was going to be for this year. But I don't know how much money he's made over the course of his career. Maybe he has some businesses, you know, to the side that are successful. Maybe he saved his money, invested well, whatever. But the bottom line is he's not rich. I mean, he's not wealthy. You know, he's not like a Peyton Manning. He's not Don McNabb. He's not making an exorbitant amount of money to where he said, you know what, I'm good. Let me do some TV. I'm fine. He's not that. And most of these guys in the NFL are not on that level. I mean, that's what, you know, NFL players, the NFL gets you talk about a league that gets banged for their buck. The NFL is the most well-run professional sports league in the world by far, as far as how they conduct business, period. You know, as far as the quality of product and what they pay for their product. They get more bang for their buck than any professional sports league on earth. There's no two ways around it. You have to earn your keep in the NFL. And more times than not, you're going to get what you deserve. You're not going to see a Joey Votto in the NFL get a just ridiculous contract you should shake your head at. Or a Ryan Howard. So, and Jacob Bell walks away. And that doesn't happen in the NFL. Players don't walk away from the NFL. The NFL kicks them out. And I don't care how great you are. When you're done, when the NFL thinks that you're done, you're finished. You know, Donovan McNabb, I just mentioned him. He probably won't play. He may never play quarterback again. Not because he doesn't want to, because nobody wants him. And this is a guy who is a borderline Hall of Famer. And went to five NFC championships. Was a franchise player of a major city, you know, Philadelphia Eagles. Of a major NFL powerhouse. But nobody wants him. That's the NFL. And this guy says, you know what? I'm good. I want to be able to, you know, function when I'm 50. So that's when you know that how real this thing is, as far as that players are scared. Players are scared. This guy was a current player. He was scheduled, again, he was scheduled to make $890,000 this year for the upcoming season. And he says at 31, you know, 31, I mean, it's old at certain positions, but 31, you know, you keep yourself in with modern technology and modern medicine and, you know, all the nutritionists and stuff, that, you know, that's not, 31 is not what 31 used to be in the NFL. It's not. See, there's a lot of guys playing over 30 in the NFL, a ton of players. And now it is a young man sport, but still, 31 is not old. It's not. But this guy said, you know what? I'm good. I'm walking away. The junior sale definitely had and played a role in him and played a role in him walking away. He came out and said it flat out. So all these things you should take in consideration, again, if you're a parent for your kid, and you would be foolish if you didn't. First thing the NFL should do is just pay all these pay all these retired players who have these medical issues because of concussions or physical disabilities playing all those years in the league. If the fact that the NFL is fighting these court cases, it is a disgrace. It's the biggest disgrace in the world. Just give them their money, and please, take care of these guys. I don't care if they were bench warmer. I don't care if they were a practice player. Whatever. Take care of them. NFL has plenty of money. I mean, NFL can print its own money. Forty-two minutes after the 9 o'clock hour, 347-215-6180 is your call number. This is the Saturday morning wake-up call. We'll be right back. Hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, as we do 90 minutes of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I gotta see the Avengers. I have to see the Avengers. I was supposed to see it last week. Didn't work out. Oh boy, the story behind that story. That's one of those off the air stories. I won't tell you. But, didn't see it last week, but I gotta see it. I mean, this movie made what, $200 million in one weekend. It's going to break some records. Will it break Avatar's record? Probably not, because there are other things coming out. You have Spider-Man coming out, which I'm not gonna say I don't have any interest, but I'm not that excited about it. The whole starting from the beginning and not enough storylines to start from the beginning from where I'm in my opinion. Batman, The Dark Knight Rises, that's the one. I mean, that's the one everybody will be probably, you know, camping out to see. I mean, that is a midnight. I might go see it on midnight, to be honest with you. So, got to see the Avengers. Once I do see it, I will talk about it on this program, give you my thoughts. Had my Avengers t-shirt on yesterday. Kids got a kick out of that. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Of course, you can always follow me at twitter.com/WilliamGerald. Hit me up at facebook.com/SurrealQuinn. We're going to get into Game 7 Lakers Nuggets. And the fact that I'm in complete shock that I'm even discussing Game 7 of this series. After last Sunday, when the Lakers won in Denver Game 4 with, you know, Blake and you had Blake and Sessions hitting the three-pointers that sealed the victory. And they said, you know what, this series will be over in 5. Lakers will wrap it up at home. Lakers, they have, over the course of the last 3 years, have been great in closeout games, especially at home and in general. I mean, they've closed out a number of people on the road as well over the past 2 or 3 years, past 4 years. And they go out there in Game 5 and absolutely lay an egg. Their effort was only salvaged somewhat by Kobe's going crazy in the fourth quarter, but for the most part, they were nowhere to be found. This Laker team, to me, is, and Steve Kerr said it right, this is not that good. They're not a championship team. I've knocked Kobe Bryant a lot this year because of some of his shot selection and wondered or questioned whether or not he can, you know, settle in on in terms of being more of a facilitator and accept that role more as Andrew Bynum emerges as the president and the future of the team. I can't knock Bryant anymore. I can't. And the reason why I can't knock him anymore is because you have two all-star caliber seven-footers who on certain nights just, you know, forget how to play basketball. Andrew Bynum should be a guy who gets you 20 and 10 or 20 and 15 every night. He should be 20, 15, and 3. 20 points, 15 rebounds, 3 blocks every night. Every night. He'll have a game where he blocks 10 shots, and then he'll have games where he gets outplayed by JaVale McGee, who, by the way, is making JaVale McGee look like, Akeem Olajuwon. I mean, come on. I mean, JaVale McGee, he's improved, but, he's still JaVale McGee. I don't know. Could JaVale McGee beat his mom one-on-one? I don't know. Maybe, I guess. His mom was a great player, by the way, Pam McGee. She was a legend at USC, so having a little fun with that. But, I think with the Lakers, you know, they are who they are. And this is why, and I had this argument with some friends about the Lakers being a fringe championship contender. I left them off my list of championship contenders at the beginning of the playoffs when I previewed the playoffs. I left them off because I didn't trust the fact that they could be consistent enough to win a championship. And I did not think that they could beat Oklahoma City and Utah, Oklahoma City and San Antonio on the same playoff round to even get to the finals. Did not believe that for a second. And I'm telling you right here, right now, normally I say Game 7 at home in the NBA is 85 to 90% road team. This Game 7 is about 65 to 70% for the Lakers. They should win. I think they're going to win, but I'm not. It's not set in stone by any stretch of imagination. Now, our test will help because they've missed his toughness, his ability to sometimes make a 3-point shot. At least he poses that threat. But, you know, Denver right now has nothing. They have nothing to lose. They're playing loose. Carl has figured something out with the lineup, you know, with using Lawson and Miller at the same time. You know, JaVale McGee's played well. You know, last game they started making some threes. Andre Miller is abusing the Lakers' smaller guards. I mean, if you don't put Kobe Bryant or Matt Barnes on Andre Miller, you're gonna make him look like Tim Hardaway. I mean, geez, Andre Miller's very good, but he's not that good. So the Lakers have really exposed themselves in this series. Again, of course, tonight you'll have Boston and Philadelphia. The two teams have met 19 times in their illustrious history. Now, this is not exactly Bird versus Dr. J, okay? Boston is the Eastern Conference's only hope to even challenge Miami or have any drama left in the Eastern Conference. Philly, to me, is just not that good. I mean, Chicago could have won those last two games, and they could be playing in a game seven easily with the Chicago Bulls team that did not have Derrick Rose or Joakim Noah for a better part of the series. So I certainly would expect Boston to handle business in about, I like Boston in five games. I think Boston, you know, Garnett's playing well. Rondo's been great. I think Boston's the type of team that you would want to catch early in the postseason, and that they, you know, will pick up some steam moving forward. Again, they are the only hope to beat the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference. Miami, of course, will go at it with Indiana tomorrow at 3:30. I don't know how excited I can get about this series. Miami will have the three best players on the floor at all times. You know, when LeBron, Wade, and Bosh are on the floor, they're the three best players on the floor at any time in this series. And, like, you know, it's just Indiana has a great ensemble cast, but again, no superstars. And again, against a team like Miami, you need a superstar to exploit them, to expose their weaknesses. Average to very good players are not going to expose Miami because they have too much star power themselves. But you get a superstar, you get a guy who can score down low, or you get a speedy point guard who can get anywhere he wants on the floor. You know, Rajon Rondo, that can hurt Miami. That's why I think Boston is such a great, intriguing matchup, you know, for a possible Eastern Conference Finals. So I expect Miami five games. And I was not impressed by Miami against New York. I'm going to be honest with you. I was not. You know, New York is playing basically with five players because everybody's injured. They're down to me and you playing point guard. And they, you know, still to fight and claw and scrape. And did not embarrass themselves versus the Miami Heat, not in the least bit. So there you go with the NBA. Game 7 tonight, Lakers, Nuggets at Staples Center. Lakers have won 10 straight home game 7s. They are 14-3. And since Kobe Bryant has joined the Lakers when having the opportunity to eliminate an opponent at home. So we'll see if those numbers will come to fruition over the course later on this evening. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we will have the React quote of the week and also Are You Kidding Me? We'll have that and much, much more in this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back.
To the garden, you gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon, walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, he's gonna save your soul. You gotta worry. If you hold on to Jesus' hand, we'll all be safe from Satan. When the thunder rolls, we just gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. Keep the devil down in the hole.
56 minutes after the 9 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call Mother's Day weekend on this 12th of May 2012. Here's the React quote of the week, and it comes from the high school ranks. So we sometimes we don't always deal with the pros. We get the high school some love at times. This is not a contact sport. It shouldn't be an issue. That is Pamela Sulzbach, who is the mother of one Paige Sulzbach. If you don't know who Paige Sulzbach is, she plays for she's a 15-year-old Mesa, Arizona baseball player whose opponent forfeited their game, their state championship game, because Paige is on the team, because she's a female. So they refused to play her. The name of the team that forfeited the match out of the championship, this happened on Thursday, was Our Lady of Sorrows. Our Lady of Sorrows. So, Paige plays for the Mesa Preparatory Academy, and again, she is the only girl on the team, and her opponent, the Alia Saros, refused to play because she's a girl. Now, you know, I just don't get the whole idea of what I don't get what you're trying to prove. Listen, if I was playing high school basketball, and I did play high school basketball, and a girl was on the other team, I would try to destroy them, to send a message that, hey, you don't belong on the same floor with me, because I'm a male. You want to call that chauvinistic? Whatever, call it what you want. That would be my attitude. Not that she's a girl, I want to hurt her, I don't play with her. She wants to play with the big boys, let her play with the big boys. Fine. It has no problem whatsoever. Now, if she gets embarrassed or gets ran over or gets taken out because of a slide, gets hurt, so be it. It is what it is. But for the opponent to refuse to play, it's just something that shouldn't happen. It shouldn't happen at all. And nothing, again, what message does it send? What point are you trying to make? The second thing is, I'm not going to... You're gonna have your whole entire high school baseball team do all these off-season workouts, weightlifting practices, win all these games, and then just throw the championship away? Really? Yeah, it's not gonna happen. Now, whether this was a school decision or whether it was just a player decision, sounds like it was a school decision. So I have a major, major problem with this. I'm sure the players will be like, look, we just want to win the championship, play against five girls. It does not matter. And you just, Sports Illustrated just came out with a cover a couple of weeks ago talking about Title X, about equality in national collegiate sports between women, men and women. You can't do this. I mean, this looks bad. You know, certain things are obvious. I mean, women should not play football. No, women should not box men. I mean, that, like, certain things are just like, you know, hello, like, use your noodle. But if a woman wants to play, if a girl wants to play high school baseball against boys, so be it. I mean, I work at a school now. I watch girls play against boys in basketball, in soccer, and baseball all the time. It's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. If she's good enough to play, that's the key. That's the question. Is she good enough to play? Clearly, she was good enough to play. Now, I don't want a girl on the team who's not good enough to play, because then now you're kind of making a mockery out of it. Now, okay, we're kind of just putting her on there. She's a sideshow at this point. Well, she's a girl, but she can't play. Well, we went on our team because she's a girl, and you would be discriminated against her if you didn't let her on our team. If she's not good enough, she's not good enough. Girl or boy, it still should be based on performance and what have you. Clearly, this girl was good enough to play second base for a championship championship caliber team. So it wasn't, her skill set was not an issue at all. So I find that very, very interesting as we get out the professional ranks and look at the high school ranks. When we return, we'll have another edition of Are You Kidding Me? We'll come back and with much, much more in this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. as we discuss the world of sports, a lot going on with the NBA and NHL playoffs. You're going to have three game sevens, so looking forward to that. Two of them tonight. You'll have Rangers, Capitals, the Rangers hosting the Capitals, and you have the Lakers hosting the Denver Nuggets. Tomorrow, of course, you'll have Memphis hosting the Los Angeles Clippers. It's time for another edition of one of our favorite segments.
Are you kidding me?
Andrew Bynum said, closeout games are actually kind of easy. This is Andrew. This is what he said.
Are you kidding me?
Now, keep this in mind about what he just said. Okay, this was said before Game 5 where he was outplayed by JaVale McGee and then proceeded to get outplayed by JaVale McGee in Game 6. Lakers have had tremendous success in up until the last two games in closeout games prior to Game 5. Over the course of the last 3 or 4 years, they've closed a number of people out on the road, especially in their championship years, especially in the years where they went to three straight finals. But Andrew Bynum has been a minimum part of that. He has been a small fraction part of those particular games because he either has been injured, hurt, or is just stuck on the bench behind Lamar Odom and Paul Gasol. You know, he'll start off, he would start off the game. When they had, Lakers had Lamar Odom, Bynum would start the game, but Odom and Gasol would finish. So the idea that he understands the concept on what it takes to close out a team is, dare I say, comical, to say the least. So for him to come out and make that statement before that game, and then to play the kind of game that he played, just shows you why Kobe Bryant does not quite want to give up the reins in L.A. It was kind of like a father who's worked all his life to build up a company, and he's been grooming his son, and he looks over and sees his son still playing, Xbox, and says his 25-year-old son playing the Xbox. He says, maybe he's not quite mature enough. Do I want to make him the president of my company right now? Maybe another couple years or so. Maybe a couple years. Not quite yet. Not quite there, buddy. You're still playing Madden. I'm sorry. Need you more focus. And that's Andrew Bynum. He's a 25-year-old, 285-pound kid. Not quite the level of immaturity of Dwight Howard, but not too far away. And he runs his mouth. He's great for a good quote. Like, if you're somebody, you're a media person, you want to speak to Andrew Bynum. Absolutely. He gives great quotes because you don't know what dumb stuff is going to come out of his mouth. He has no filter whatsoever. None. The second thing, NFL could have replacement officials in the upcoming 2012 season.
Are you kidding me?
I've mentioned this earlier over the course of this show, during the course of this particular show, and I've said this countless times, that the NFL is one of the most well-run organizations in the world. Forget about just sports, professional sports leagues. Any organization, IBM, Apple, whoever you want to, whichever organization, business organization you want to throw into the mix, the NFL doesn't have to take a backseat to any organization. That's how, Facebook, whatever. The NFL can print its own money. The idea that the NFL would even entertain replacement officials is the biggest joke in the world. A deal is going to get done. Okay, a deal is going to get done. This is the NFL using leverage against the real officials in order to try to, it's money, it's no fair, all fairs, and it's war, it's money. The gloves are off, so NFL is as cutthroat as there is as a professional league, so they're going to try to squeeze every dime out of this particular negotiation. That's just, you know, that's business. But for the NFL to even, again, to even put it out there that they could possibly use the replacement officials, I mean, give me a break. I mean, the NFL, the real officials have enough trouble dealing with officiating these games. Forget about replacement officials. I mean, that the league, that would ruin the season if you had replacement officials. You can't. There's no way in the world that you can have replacement officials doing NFL games. It's just not, like, it's just, it wouldn't work out. It wouldn't work out at all. And if you're the NFL, I mean, just any of them, just give them their money. I mean, again, the NFL can print his own money. Just get the officials their money. I mean, it is a brutal job. They don't work but 20 games anyway between preseason and regular season. Some of them may be working more because of playoffs. But, like, I don't understand why the NFL, you know, it's not like the NHL where you have, you know, where you cutting coupons. I mean, come on. I mean, the NFL... The poorest NFL team is makes more money than the richest NBA team in terms of how much it's worth. So I think the NFL could just stop being petty and, you know, pay these officials, get these officials their money. Roddy White gets into another Twitter scout squabble.
Are you kidding me?
For some reason, Roddy White likes Twitter wars. I don't know why a guy who is maybe one of the top, you know, 10 to 15 receivers in the league, had a great year, making a lot of money. I don't know how he has the time to be on Twitter and to argue, but, you know, it seems to be happening on the regular. The latest is White got into it with fans on Twitter saying, "It's crazy how football players are killing our game. You signed up to play a violent game and made a lot of money. Now you talk about how talk bad about it." He later on went to add, "Yes, older players didn't make what we made, but I remember when gas was 89 cents on the dollar. Really? Yeah, how old are you, 24? I mean, come on. The cost of living was different. I don't have nothing against old players. They made football what it is today, and I love those guys, and I don't have a problem with them suing the NFL. I don't have to worry about it. The NFL has enough money to pay them." Oh, jeez. I mean, goodness. I mean, you talk about putting your foot in your mouth. I mean, shut up. Get off Twitter. I mean, if there could be a law amongst professionals, if I were the commissioner of sports, I would ban all players off Twitter and Facebook, or Twitter. I really would. That would be one of the first top five things I would do as commissioner of sports. Well, maybe top 15. There are other things I want to do if I were a commissioner of sports. But, I mean, again, the Twitter is just, you know, and again, the time you waste, this is how I would view it. This is why I would never be on Twitter if I were a professional athlete. Time you waste on Twitter is time you could be getting better. So I wouldn't waste a second tweeting anything. So, you know, you have that with Roddy White. No surprise there again. He's made an unfortunate habit of this, of being on Twitter and having these Twitter wars with fans who obviously seem to be able to get to him. When we return on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, we'll talk Grizzlies, Clippers not able to close out the deal. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. 17 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Surreal Quinn taking you to the bottom half of the 10 o'clock hour. 90-minute show today. Of course, if you missed this live edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, you can always catch the archive edition at blogtalkradio.com/SurrealQuinn anytime, or any of my other past episodes. Certainly chime in, take a look at some episodes from even 2008. That's, of course, when we did October 2008, the year and month that we started here. So great feature on Blog Talk Radio that allows you to look back and look forward to episodes up and coming and in the past. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Didn't mention before I get to the Grizzlies Clippers. Of course, LeBron James is expected to be named MVP for the third time in 4 years. He joined a who's list of three-time MVP winners. You know, you had Jordan, Magic. Of course, you've had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Lou Alcindor, Abdul-Jabbar, same person, but both of them won the MVP awards. Bill Russell. So it was a select company. Moses Malone, Wilt Chamberlain, all those guys. The one thing that those guys have in common that LeBron doesn't have, of course, is a NBA championship. And again, I don't care if he wins 10 MVPs. It all comes down to what he does at the most critical point of the NBA, of the Miami Heat season. Right now, that'll be, and it's looking more like that'll be the Eastern Conference Finals and also possibly the NBA Finals. Until he's the MVP of the NBA Finals, then come talk to me. Because what he does in the regular season, to me, it looks good once the Hall of Fame votes go in. And once you start doing some, you know, looking back at the career of LeBron James, it looks good there. The numbers are great. But, again, the thing that separates the good from the great is how you perform in the most pressurized spots and the most critical spots of a basketball game. When the pressure's on, when the heat, when those bullets start flying in the NBA Finals, I want to see if LeBron James is going to stand up to the test. He has not. He did not last year. I think he's going to get another opportunity this year. So we'll see what happens. I myself would have voted for Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant doesn't have two All-Stars playing with him. I know Wade was injured, but Dwayne Wade is going to be second team All-NBA. Okay, and so is Russell Westbrook, for that matter. But outside of that, you know, he has Westbrook and, you know, and some role players. Harden had a great year, I understand that. But Miami still has, again, two Olympians playing. LeBron's still playing alongside two Olympians. I don't care what you say about Chris Bosh. Chris Bosh was an All-Star this year. And Chris Bosh, before he got to Miami, was a guy who was putting up 24-10. So, you know, I think people try to take away from Chris Bosh and like he's a role player. He's not a role player. He's an All-Star. He's not, you know, he's not Dwayne Wade. He's not LeBron James. He's not, you know, Kobe Bryant, Carmelo Anthony. He's not that. He's not on that part, but he's still an All-Star player. And the idea that Dwayne Wade, you know, is not who he is. I mean, Dwayne Wade is going to be a Hall of Fame two guard and is going to go down as one of the top, you know, behind Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, and I would say Jerry West, probably the fourth greatest two guard of all time. But again, can't argue with LeBron's numbers. Statistically, he's, you know, the closest thing we've seen to basically almost Will Chamberlain from a statistical standpoint. Guard can guard all five positions, had a tremendous year, and I have no major problem with him winning MVP. Now, would I have voted for Kevin Durant? Yes, but that's just me. We began the program with the Clippers and Grizzlies. Clippers falling to the Grizzlies at home, blowing a chance to wrap up the series in Los Angeles. They were down by 8. Clippers were up by 8 with about 8 minutes left. But even with that said, it felt like a Grizzly night. Grizzlies controlled the pace. They want to turn it like the lower. If this game is under 100 into the 90s, it is a Grizzly type game. Grizzlies are a physical team. They want to pound you. They want to get you in the half court and let those big dudes, whether it's Randolph, Gasol, Spates, let them just pound the hell out of you. Clippers want to run and gun. They want to get out in transition. get out and, you know, get out in the open. But they were not able to do that. The Memphis controlled the tempo, controlled the pace. Paul and, of course, Blake Griffin were about a shell of themselves, about 50% of what they normally look like. That is, certainly that is a major problem for the Clippers. They don't have enough offense outside of those two players. If one of those, if both those two players are off, it's off their game. Now, they can get away with Paul being great and Blake Griffin being so-so. You can get away with that because Paul's impact on the game, Paul impacts the game at a much higher level at this point in his career than Blake Griffin. That's what makes Paul so great, that he, you know, he can dominate a game without having to get 25, 30 points. But last night, Paul looked terrible. I mean, there's no two ways about it. There was one play that just showed you where they were at physically, where they don't get back on a Memphis fast break, and then Caron Butler during the timeout says, you know, basically yells at Blake Griffin, like, dude, you know, get back. But both of those guys right now are hurting. Memphis is going back home, and I like Memphis to, you know, I like Memphis to win this game. I think it'll be a very close game. It's unfortunate for the Clippers because I thought the Clippers throughout the course of the series had outplayed Memphis, and I thought they were the mentally tough team. But, you know, you only have so much gas left in the tank, you know, with some of these injuries and, you know, this compressed schedule. Who knows? All that could be coming up to catching up with Chris Paul and also Blake Griffin. Well, Blake Griffin as well. But you will hope that from Blake Griffin's standpoint, you know, he's still very young, still extremely young. The injury is not serious. The injury is not too serious where he can't play. But again, Blake Griffin right now is not a cerebral player. So if he can't play above the rim, then his game is very much limited. Now he's improved, but in terms of being a better half court player. But let's not kid ourselves. The guy is an above the rim high flyer, and if he can't move the way he can normally is able to move, then, you know, he's going to be very limited in terms of what he can and cannot do. Again, I like Memphis in this game. I think this will be a very close, hotly contested game. This series has been close. It's been a great series, starting from game one when the Clippers are up. I mean, Memphis is up by 27, blew the lead in the fourth quarter. All three games in LA have been close. The Clippers will go in with a lot of confidence. If you're the Clippers, you have to be. I'll be disappointed about, of course, blowing a 3-1 lead, but I would be very confident that I could go to Memphis and win a game seven. Remember, you know, Memphis. This is not the Boston Garden here. You know, Memphis doesn't have great game seven history. They've only played in one other game seven. A lot of inexperience in terms of this game seven when you think about it. I mean, this will be a first game seven for Blake Griffin. This will be a first, especially from a Clipper perspective, this will be a first game seven for like a Randy Foy, Eric Bledsoe, those guys, DeAndre Jordan. So experience factor goes to Memphis. They were just in a game seven last year, lost tough game to Oklahoma City Thunder. Also, again, you're going to have game seven, Lakers, Nuggets. Again, I think both of these teams are going to be sacrificial lambs for Oklahoma City. Don't see the Lakers beating, though the Lakers do match up much better, but don't see either one of these teams beating Oklahoma City. Lakers have not played well over the last, you know, two games, really over the last three or four games in terms of in this series. Even the game four they won, they didn't play well. Denver missed opportunities to tie the series during that particular game. And listen, George Karl made a couple of adjustments with the two point guards. Also, you know, he says he came to the realization that the Lakers were not that much better than his Nuggets. I disagree. If the Lakers played the way they're supposed to play, they would be that much better by pounding the ball down low. But why would you want to pound the ball down low when you cannot trust your big man to show up? I mean, Bynum and Gasol have been disappearing acts for the last two games. Gasol has 3 points and 3 rebounds, which to me, it's impossible for a guy 7 feet playing 7 feet, 250 pounds, and playing, you know, more than 30 minutes. Like, it's impossible to have only 3 points and three rebounds. You would think that the Lakers would be able to win this game. I am not as confident as a lot of the Laker fans are. This game is not in the... I have a feeling that Laker fans and myself are going to be sweating bullets with about 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter. I really do. I have a feeling that Laker fans are going to be sweating bullets late in the fourth quarter. Normally, I would say, considering their history, considering, you know, the whole history of the NBA as far as home court, game seven, I would normally give the Lakers a 90 to 95% chance of winning this game. I'm giving them basically 65 to 70% chance. And that's below average in terms of what teams normally, the game seven, all-time game sevens, is about 85% that the home team normally wins game seven. I don't trust the Lakers right now. Metal World Peace will help. It'll give them some toughness, but those two bigs have a lot to answer for based on their performance in the last two games. 11.16 rebounds. That was the softest 11.16 rebound effort I've ever seen in recent memory with Andrew Bynum in his last game. It was one of the most non-existent 11.16 rebound games you'll ever see. I think he had four blocks, too. Didn't met jack in terms of how it impacted the game. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. I will see you next week. Preakness, Alex Brown, hopefully. Have a great Mother's Day weekend. So long. Enjoy the basketball. Enjoy the hockey. I am gone.